John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, March 16th, 2011. Mahmoud Abbas has stated on Wednesday that he is willing to travel to the Gaza Strip to meet with Ismail Haniyeh of Hamas in an attempt to restart the stalled reconciliation attempts between the two parties. Abbas also stated, speaking in Ramallah, that he will not run for re-election and that he still intends to hold elections within the next 6 months. The speech was made in response to the popular demonstrations attended by thousands at various locations in both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, calling for unity of all Palestinian peoples and an end to the political rivalry between Hamas and Fatah. Following these protests, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh invited Abbas to come to Gaza to renew unity efforts, a call that Abbas has apparently heeded, although Hamas stated that they have not been in direct contact with Abbas's office. Haniyeh said that his government in Gaza supports the youth movement's call for national unity based on reconciliation and transparency, and commented that several Palestinian leaders in the West Bank lack an independent political stance, and that those leaders fear reconciliation and political partnership, as such a partnership jeopardizes their personal interests and agendas. Hamas spokesman in the Gaza Strip, Dr. Sami Abu Zuhri, slammed the Maan news agency for what he called, quote, publishing false reports that proved it is biased towards the Fatah movement, end quote. Maan responded to the allegations, reiterating attacks were carried out by Hamas security forces against Gaza protesters. Abu Zuhri added that the actions of Maan reflect its nature as, quote, a tool in the hands of Fatah movement by publishing false reports that contradict reports published in local and international media agencies, end quote. Responding to the statements of Abu Zuhri and the government media office in the Gaza Strip, Maan said that it is concerned about this response, adding that, quote, a picture is better than a thousand words, end quote. Referring to pictures published by the Al Jazeera News, showing the security forces attacking non-violent protesters with batons. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and Zakari Pahizia.
Basra, Iraq, Tuesday. A U.S. Army patrol was attacked with an improvised explosive device in southern Iraq city of Basra, causing no human or material losses, a Basra security source reported Tuesday. Quote, an IED blew up against a U.S. Army patrol on the Hamden Road, 10 kilometers south of Basra on Tuesday, but caused no human or material damage, the security source told Aswad Al Iraq News Agency. Wait a minute! What U.S. Army patrol? What IED? I thought U.S. combat operations in Iraq were over! Oh yeah, that's been said before, almost 8 years ago. Had enough? Anti-war protesters will be at the White House for a protest in civil disobedience beginning at noon on Saturday, the 19th of March, the 8th anniversary of the start of the war in occupied Iraq.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
President Barack Obama signed an executive order in early March to create a new system of indefinite detention for detainees held at the military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The order, which establishes a new review system for terrorism detainees, comes 2 years after then-newly elected President Obama promised to close the Guantanamo Detention Center. The administration has faced strong resistance in Congress to transferring terrorism detainees to American maximum security prisons. ACLU Executive Director Anthony Romero blasted the order as a complete about-face on closing the military prison. Lawyer David Reams, who represents 20 detainees, says there is no real difference between the review system set up in the Obama executive order and the policy in place under the previous Bush administration. According to the Washington Post, the order applies to 48 of the remaining 172 detainees at Gitmo. These detainees, according to Justice Department lawyers, cannot be tried in a military commission or in U.S. courts because of problems in disclosing evidence. Under Obama's executive order, each detainee will receive an unclassified review of the reasons for their indefinite detention. Prisoners have the right to present evidence to contest the findings of the review.
Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQT Radio at hushmail.com. WSQT Radio at hushmail.com. Sixty-six years ago, the United States dropped two devastating nuclear bombs on Japan. Now two more U.S.-designed nuclear devices, the ancient boiling water reactors at Fukushima Daiichi, designed by the General Electric here in the United States, are again spreading poison across Japan. There are 23 sister nuclear plants here in the U.S., two of them as close as Pennsylvania. The 8.9 magnitude earthquake and tsunami that followed on the 11th of March were among the worst in recorded history, maybe second only to the 7.0 magnitude earthquake in Haiti for devastation and suffering. Japan's better resource base and construction were largely canceled out by nearly 100 times as much earthquake energy. After walls of water killed thousands of people and left millions of more homeless, now Japan must face their worst nightmare, another episode of nuclear contamination, estimated at 4 on a scale where Chernobyl was the only 7. These reactors were sited, like many reactors here in the United States, in an area that has always had earthquakes. Yet they were so configured that disconnecting the electrical grid would shut down the cooling system at an electrical generating plant. What do you want to bet the same is true of every single reactor here in the U.S. that came from the same designers at General Electric? By what rights should the people of Japan today or the people of America tomorrow have to eat radioactive fish, eat radioactive bread, or drink radioactive milk because General Electric in the United States, utility bosses in Japan, or both want to make money? Perhaps General Electric would be interested in using some of that glowing green cash to help the people of Japan clean up the messes left behind by GE's products at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant? The Japanese government is doing what they can, evacuating the most severely contaminated areas and dispensing iodine tablets to ward off thyroid cancer from radioactive iodine, but the cleanup will take years. And that's if engineers can stop the plants from melting down the rest of the way and creating a second Chernobyl. Now's the time to pull the plug on building any more nuclear power plants.
The disasters that have befallen Japan continue to multiply. Thousands are already confirmed dead, with the toll expected to exceed 10,000 from both the 9.0 magnitude earthquake and the tsunami it triggered, which struck the island nation on March 11th. Add to these already cataclysmic conditions, failures of cooling systems, hydrogen explosions, fires, and the possible breach of containment structures at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in the northern part of the country, where three reactors were operating at the time. The failures at the nuclear plant may result in the worst scenario imaginable, a meltdown, with a massive release of radiation. Hundreds of thousands of people have been evacuated from the area, and another 140,000 living in proximity to the plants being ordered to stay inside their homes, sealing them up as best they can to prevent radiation exposure. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Kevin Camps, a nuclear waste specialist with the group Beyond Nuclear, whose mission is to educate and activate the public on the connections between nuclear power and nuclear weapons. The group advocates for the abandonment of both to safeguard the planet's future. Camps talks about the effects of exposure to radiation on human health and why building more nuclear plants in the U.S. is not the solution to our energy needs or to address the dangers of global warming. The information in this interview reflects facts known about Japan's nuclear power accident on March 13th.
Well, it's fair to say this is an unprecedented nuclear emergency in history. Radioactive cesium is escaping at Fukushima, as is radioactive iodine. And radioactive iodine-131 attacks the human thyroid gland, and that's why there has already been widespread distribution of potassium iodide tablets to evacuees. The evacuees now number 350,000 people, which means that this is an evacuation as big as the evacuation that took place around Chernobyl 25 years ago. So it's a good thing that they're distributing potassium iodide. They did not do that at Chernobyl. There's been a thyroid pathology epidemic in Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia ever since Chernobyl happened because they didn't distribute these protective tablets. But one problem in Japan is that they, again, were downplaying the situation in the early hours. They only evacuated people out to 2 miles from the Fukushima nuclear power plant, and they told other people beyond that point just to stay indoors. Well, they should have evacuated those people in the beginning. Everybody should have been given potassium iodide tablets immediately. They were not. And so there were many hours where people were in their home as little as 3 kilometers away from this reactor in distress without potassium iodide tablets, breathing radioactivity in the air, radioactive gases, radioactive particles in fine dust form. If radioactive cesium and radioactive iodine are loose in the environment, that means that there has at least been fuel damage. But now we know that there is a partial meltdown because the authorities have admitted it. There are over 200 different radioactive isotopes in nuclear fuel, in high-level radioactive waste, and many of them are biologically hazardous. So any talk of benign radioactivity or less harmful radioactivity is very misleading. You name the radioactive isotope, it's going to have its own particular impact on the human body. Radioactive cesium seeks muscle tissue. Radioactive strontium seeks bone. Radioactive iodine seeks the thyroid. Plutonium, a microscopic speck in your lung, if inhaled, will initiate lung cancer. It may take a decade or two, but you will have lung cancer someday if you inhale plutonium. That, too, may be being released right now in Japan because the fuel has melted down. Everything in it is now airborne. It's being driven out of the reactor into the environment by steam and pressure and falling out downwind over vast territories at this point.
Kevin Camps, someone I respect a lot, James Hansen, says we need more nuclear power to offset fossil fuels to reduce the threat of climate change. These existing plants are mostly like 40 years old. What about a new generation of nukes with a different design?
Well, I'm sorry to have to say that I think James Hansen really needs to do his research on this subject. I know that he is a brilliant climatologist and very courageous in that regard, but his advocacy for Generation 4 atomic energy as some kind of solution to the climate crisis is just very misplaced. The reason I say that is that Generation 4 atomic reactors are decades off, most optimistically, because they are not, as you said, in existence yet. They are merely on paper. About a decade ago, the top leading candidate, Generation 4 atomic reactor, again, this is all theory, it's not reality yet, it was called a pebble bed modular reactor. And the best selling point for the industry on this reactor was we're going to save a whole lot of money in the construction of these reactors because we're not going to build containment buildings because they're so inherently safe. You couldn't possibly melt one down. You don't need containment if you're not going to have a meltdown. That was what they said. September 11th happened. The major U.S. partner in the deal walked away. A South African firm was leading this effort. And Exelon Nuclear of Chicago walked away from the project because without a containment building, this reactor, even if it were true, which it's not, that it was inherently safe, would be wide open to terrorist attack. And just like with the Chernobyl reactor, the pebble bed modular reactor used a lot of graphite in its design. Graphite is flammable. So from a security perspective, it was wide open to attack and catastrophic radioactivity release. But even the safety issues with that reactor were very real. In Germany, a pebble bed modular reactor that was research in scale suffered a radiation release right about the same time as the Chernobyl disaster. So we've had accidents. We have the risk of attack. That was the lead candidate Generation 4 design. So the thing is, something that's that far off in the future anyway, not even perfected, actually risky, it can't help us with the climate crisis. As Hansen himself has said, we have a decade or two to turn this thing around in a very big way. We can't wait a generation for these new reactors to show up. And besides waiting that long, these new reactors are going to cost literally hundreds of billions of dollars just in research and development and then finally construction. So we could waste a whole lot of time and a whole lot of money and a whole lot of breath arguing about more atomic energy of a better form. But we could solve the problem in the meantime, if we chose to, with renewables, with efficiency, that do not have radiological risks whatsoever.
That was Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear. Contact the group at area code 301-270-2209 or visit their website at beyondnuclear.org.
Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping. Come, they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Something.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip to undercut the market. Hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart,
it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar, Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Overseer plantation mentality results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they want to come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
After weeks of massive and sustained pro-labor demonstrations against Wisconsin Republican Governor Scott Walker's legislation to strip public employee unions of most of their collective bargaining rights, Walker prevailed and signed the bill into law on March 11th. Passage of the bill came despite the absence of 14 Democratic senators from the state in a move to deny the Republican majority a quorum. The GOP revised Walker's budget repair bill, carving out the section designed to weaken unions, thus overcoming the need for the Democrats to be present for a quorum. Democrats have filed a complaint with the state capitol's district attorney, charging the maneuvers Republicans employed to pass the bill violated the state's open meetings law. Anti-Walker activists are also getting petition signatures to recall 8 Republican state senators who voted for the union-busting bill. If the Democrats can win 3 additional seats in the state Senate, they will take control of that branch of the legislature. On April 5th, election for a state Supreme Court seat, currently held by a Republican, is another focus of pro-union forces. The day after Walker signed his anti-union bill, an estimated 100,000 people protested at the state capitol and gave the returning 14 Democratic lawmakers, who had earlier fled the state, a hero's welcome. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Bill Fletcher Jr., a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and former vice president for international trade union development programs with the George Meany Center of the AFL-CIO. He discusses the labor movement's response to the Republican Party's multi-state attack against public sector unions' collective bargaining rights.
The attack that's going on working people right now, I call it the final offensive. That we've been going through a 35-year war against working people. The living standard of working people has been dropping since roughly 1975. And greater and greater amounts of wealth are being accumulated by smaller and smaller percentages of the population. And then on top of that, or as part of that, unions have been under assault actively since the early 1980s. It's been an ongoing, protracted fight that many people judged based on the specific incidents. There was PATCO, and there was this and that, as opposed to understanding that the effort, the objective of the hardline Republican right is to eliminate unions. So what we're seeing right now is an attempt, using the pretext of budgetary problems, to get rid of public sector unions. And people should be very clear, the U.S. is not broke. The states are not broke. There's a fiscal crisis that's largely the result of irrational tax cuts that have taken place that have benefited the rich. And so when they're in the midst of these financial crises, what's happening is that the unions become the scapegoats, and the public sector unions in particular. And so we're witnessing an attempt to get rid of unions altogether.
Bill Fletcher, we've seen an outpouring of solidarity protests and recall petition drives in states like Wisconsin, also similar developments in Ohio, Indiana, Tennessee, Idaho, and elsewhere. The involvement by just grassroots people is unlike almost anything we've seen from the labor movement in many decades. And this seems to be coming up from the bottom, not from the top down. What is it that we're witnessing that seems so unique?
Well, what we're witnessing, and I agree with you, is in one part, and this may sound sort of strange for many of your listeners, is the contagion from the Arab revolt. That one of the things that has happened, and this is actually something that many journalists have been finding and talking to demonstrators in Wisconsin and other places, is that they actually were very inspired by what they've been seeing in the Arab world, where people under far worse conditions have stood up in massive numbers and taken on tyrannical regimes. So part of what happened was, in Wisconsin, it wasn't simply that people were tired of being stepped on, because Lord knows we've been stepped on for a long time, but people saw around the world that other people have been fighting back successfully. And so that becomes another contagion within the United States. And you're absolutely right. It is incredibly exciting to witness what's unfolding before our eyes. The challenge will now be, particularly after the Republican coup in Wisconsin last week, of moving quickly to separate the union destruction provisions from the rest of the budget, the challenge will now be, what next? How to continue the struggle? And part of that is going to have to be electoral, as you mentioned, recalls, as well as what I hope will be the identification of good progressive candidates who represent working people to run. But the other thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to stay in the streets and make it clear that it isn't business as usual.
Bill, from your perspective, how can the labor movement take advantage of this once-in-a-generation moment when so many working families are ready to take a stand with substantial public support? A surprise to many, these polls have shown that overwhelmingly people do not want to see the government take away union rights from public employees, unions, or anybody else.
I think that there's several things that have to happen. One is that the unions themselves have to reformulate their mission. And the mission needs to be a mission of social justice. This was one of the key issues that we raised in our book, Solidarity Divided. But in addition to that, they've got to take on the question of revenue, that is, of taxes. The reality is that governments aren't funded based on magic or good wishes. There's money. question is, where does the money come from? And if you want government to serve the population, it needs to be funded. So part of what the unions, to a great extent, have avoided for years is really taking on the question of where do we get the money from? And when you deal with the reality of the polarization of wealth that's been taking place over the last 30, 35 years, we understand that we've got to go to those people who've been robbing us for these years, and we need to get that back. We also need, and again, many unions don't want to touch this, we need to take on the question of the wars. Afghanistan and Iraq have been breaking the bank. And even leaving aside the human costs of these wars, the fiscal costs are prohibitive. The unions really need to take that on. The other thing that they need to take on is that they need to win the battle around the issue of public service and public space. The unions have got to be understood to be the defenders, the guardians of the public space. And the people need to see them as those guardians. It means that the unions, they have to rethink their mission and see their mission is not simply protecting the rights and benefits of those who happen to be members of unions, but they have to really be advocates for economic justice.
That was Bill Fletcher, Jr., a senior scholar with the Institute for Policy Studies and a longtime labor activist. He is co-author of Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Towards Social Justice. Read Fletcher's articles online at blackcommentator.com, where he serves on the website's editorial board.
15th of March, protesters showed up outside the Social Security Administration demanding that proposed budget cuts for Social Security be canceled. Both budget cuts in terms of benefit reductions and budget cuts in terms of firing staff, so it would take forever, as in years and more, to get a claim processed. And on the other side, just say no to Coke, as in the infamous Koch brothers who are pushing the economic crack that is tearing apart American families.
My father, who was a truck driver, had worked for the Great Western States Grocery Company for 19 years. When Safeway bought that grocery store chain, one of the first things they did was to try to get rid of people who were about to be vested in the pension plan, including my dad.
Republicans in the House have done is jam through a budget which would cut $1.7 billion from that budget request.
No!
It would slice our current funding by $600 million. It would cause Social Security employees to be furloughed for a month.
Oh.
Whoa!
Oh. What does that mean, furloughed for a month? It means the doors of this building would be closed. It means you call our 800 number, there's no one to answer the phone. It means that when we are open, you won't have enough people to service the public.
Long lines.
Many lines out the door. Many of our offices are already our lines out the door. It'll be worse. When people are on the 800 number, good luck to get through. That's what that means.
Wisconsin. We are.
Wisconsin.
We are.
Wisconsin.
We are. So, we're going to dial the number. It's 202-224-3121. If you're from Virginia, ask for Senator Webb. If you're from D.C., ask for Senator Warner. And if you're from Maryland, ask for Senator Cardin.
Let's see all those campaign cash pimps try to get through now.
202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. And we're going to ask them, no cuts to Social Security Administration.
If you think budget cuts will make our services better, just think of Metro as a prototype and expect similar results in all other services if the GOP gets their way.
On the 16th of March, an estimated 2,000 people besieged a fundraiser in D.C. for Wisconsin's Republican members of their legislature before taking over the streets and marching to the White House.
Is somebody going in?
Yeah!
running the thing. Here they come to the door. This one of ours was inside. Here come the enemy.
No, they're good. They're good. They're good.
Oh, there are.
They're firefighters.
There are. There are. Those are ours. Got a whole bunch inside.
There ain't no pilot.
Damn.
Fire people, the fire people don't
suit block, eh? That's what I call stealthy.
No one's gonna pick it up.
On the street.
Large number of people in suits and ties pretending to be Republicans managed to penetrate the fundraiser, get inside, and deploy signs before being escorted out. The disguise was so thorough, even other protesters mistook them for the GOP. I've only seen a suit block like that done twice. Once was at the GOP fundraiser for the Wisconsin State Republican legislators, and the other was over 20 years ago when former dictator of El Salvador, Roberto Darbison, visited D.C. and his convoy was ambushed by protesters in front of the White House. The term suit block is a takeoff on a black block, which is an anarchist mode of protest where people dress entirely in matching black uniforms covering their faces and cannot be identified. In the case of a suit block, they can't be identified as being protesters, giving maximum stealth in an event such as a political fundraiser.
Looks like World Bank 11 years ago, back in 2000. Deaf white marchers set off for the White House to remind President Obama that it was not the GOP and not the Tea Party that put him in power. Union too. Here we got a crowd gathering in front of the White House. They just marched in from disrupting that GOP fundraiser for Wisconsin State GOP legislators. Gotta be thousands here by now.
About 2,000 according to one estimate.
Ken, it's like World Bank, April 16th, 2000. When marchers headed back towards 601 13th Street where the fundraiser had been held, the cops tried and failed to keep marchers off the sidewalk, and when marchers arrived, a fire alarm was ringing and two fire trucks responded to 601 13th Street where the fundraiser had been held, and it turned out the firemen were there to give a speech for the union. But they didn't think we'd be back here. I'll call the fire department up here. I have a feeling they're going to have to evacuate the fundraiser if that alarm has called in the fire department. Fire regulations don't allow them to stay in there while this kind of situation is investigated now, do they? And firemen have a union. Let's see what these union firemen have to say about these guys staying inside while they investigate a hazardous situation.
Legislators about what's going on in the state of Wisconsin, or in federal legislators, I should say. We have the House of Labor in Wisconsin burning right now. And I know many of you may have heard me say this already, but firefighters are here to put that fire out.
Ooh. Sure are.
We have been at Capitol Hill in Madison marching every day for the last 23, 24 days, however long it's going to take. Like I said, Andrew to one is Andrew to all.
That's right.
But we're not going to let them divide and conquer. We are union brothers and sisters. We all have to stick together. They tell us that the state is broke. They keep telling us.
Early morning on the 16th of March, an alarm was ringing at the D.C. Republican Party's downtown headquarters. The alarm was ringing because their windows had been shot out with a BB gun. Someone recovered a BB at the scene, confirming that actual firearms had not been used yet, but their windows were still totally cracked up. Well, the windows are not the only thing that is cracked up about the D.C. or any Republican Party. So are their politics. Sounds to me like someone seriously doesn't like the union busting, budget cutting, tax breaks for the rich, and throw the poor under the bus politics of the GOP.
No more war pigs have the power. Hand of God has struck the hour. Of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling, begging mercy for their sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings.